Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
The only way to score is, of course, to play with a hand break off.
Hello, I'm Ian Stone, and welcome to the final hand break off for this season, brought to you, as always, by The Athletic. Now, earlier on, I had a chat with Art de Roche about the women's team, and we also had a chat about the under-23s, and we'll play that out a bit later in the show. But we've got a lot to get through today, and get through it we must. To do that, I'm joined by Amy Lawrence and Adrian Clark. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello.
Morning. Morning. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of what I think we can agree was a pretty emotionally draining season, we thought we'd ask our guests to describe the season, or at least some aspect of it, in three words. Now, we did actually get James McNicholas, who can't be here this morning, to do that. And I think we've got a little voice note that we can play out now.
Not to sidestep the issue of our final league position, but my three words for the season would be fans came back. In a literal sense, the fans back in the stadium again, which was so welcome and so fantastic, but also the re-engagement, the re-energising of the Arsenal supporters, the connection that has been rediscovered between them and the team. So, yeah, I think when I reflect on this year, in the future, fans came back. We'll sum it up.
Yeah, that was actually way more than three words, wasn't it, really? He had to contextualise what he'd said. But I get the point. Fans did come back. Amy, what about you? What have you got as a three words for our season? Or some aspect of it?
Not enough goals.
Very good.
You know what? Beautifully succinct. Adrian, what about you?
Yeah, I'm glad, because I think we're going to cover all of the bases here, because mine is good window, bad. As in, we had a good window, we had a bad window. So, if you chuck that in with the goals and the fans, we're kind of, yeah, a lot of it's there in nine words.
Okay, no, that's fair enough. I was actually thinking of doing Never Play Cedric. That's three words.
It is. Just got a great goal.
But we have basically done the season in 12 words there.
We could have had Tavares there as well, by the way, at certain points. But we'll get to all of that. Yes. Anyway, we are going to do a sort of season review. We'll have a little chat. Arsenal 5, Everton 1 yesterday at a sunny and I think pretty happy Emirates. And the season finishes with us in fifth place. Slightly otherworldly atmosphere, I think. We won't dwell too long on yesterday's game, but I'll ask you both, should Nuno Tavares be fined £1,000 every time he cuts inside and shoots? All right, it's just a general question there, because he obviously doesn't have a right foot, as far as I can tell. The second one was closer than the first one.
It's funny, because he scored, the first goal he scored was in pre-season, cutting in on his right foot against Glasgow Rangers. Do you remember it? And it was one of those things that I think he talked about afterwards, saying, oh, this is something I do really well. But
is that right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that happened. But no, yeah, he's not the best with the blasters with his right foot, is he? That's for sure.
No, he's not.
When I talked about good window, bad, probably out of the summer signings, which was overwhelmingly a really good window because of Ødegaard, Ramsdale, Tomiyasu, White, I think Tavares is the one where there's a big question mark over whether he's up to it long term for Arsenal. But yeah,
we can get to that. A lot of goodbyes yesterday, Amy. People waving. I was trying to work out whether they're waving in a sort of just a goodbye way, see you next season, or just a thank you and it's been a pleasure and I'm off to pastures new now. I was looking for clues. Did you see anything that might have point that might point us in a particular direction?
Not really.
No.
I think that, you know, there wasn't anything particularly emphatic. And I think it was maybe notable. Well, I think when Lacazette came on.
There were a lot of Lacazettes, weren't there?
I think
and all shapes and sizes.
There's definitely a family resemblance.
There's a lot of Odegaards as well, I noticed.
Yes, actually, I saw them outside the ground. I saw these four Nordic strapping lads who all had brand new Odegaard 8 shirts on and took a photo of them, thinking, because it was quite picturesque, actually, the way they were standing outside the stadium. And then when I saw them on the pitch, I thought, aha, okay, I get it now. Probably not just standard tourists.
Aha is Aha, of course, are a Norwegian band. By the way.
Yeah. Even trying that
on the breakdown live, I was a bit of a misery guts actually. Afterwards, when we sort of screened a little bit of the lap of appreciation, I got on a bit of a high horse saying too many people, too many brothers, sisters, grandmas.
There were
grandmas,
too many people.
Like
yeah.
just have your kids. Like that'll do. It's too much. Yeah.
In fact, just a minor point. But somebody pointed out that, it's Thomas Partey looking at it. And I was like, because he was in civvies. I don't know if you spotted him, but he didn't actually have his kit on, which I thought was unusual. If we're looking for clues and body language, you see, this is the trouble with overanalyzing this stuff we know absolutely bollocks all about. But anyway, and I didn't notice him because there were so many people about, a lot of them in, you know, not players, that actually someone standing around in a suit. I was like, oh, yeah, actually, that's the midfielder that Arsenal have missed terribly over these last
Missed terribly. And, of course, we will talk about all of that. And one more thing. Actually, you know what? We've sort of done the game. I mean, who cares? We beat Everton. Who cares? I mean, essentially, let's be fair. We were enjoying ourselves because it was a nice day and we're banging in goals. Everton fans are happy because Liverpool haven't won the title. No one was really that bothered. And we managed to abuse Dele Alli. I mean, what's not to like about... To be honest, he gave a little wry smile at the end of the game when we were sort of giving him the bird. And I liked him a bit more for that. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah. He desperately wanted to buy it back, didn't he?
He did.
The trouble was he was having an absolute stinker.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, how can you buy it back when you're having that kind of a game?
He's not up to it anymore. I'm watching Bukayo Saka just making him look. It was like England's past and England's future. There it is, really. Anyway, we gave Frank Lampard a tough day, so that was enjoyable. And we won 5-1 in the sunshine, and it was all very nice, but it wasn't enough to get us into fourth place.
Our job, my job, is to squeeze the lemon as much as I possibly can.
Let's do our review of the season. If I had to sum it up, I would say better than we thought it might be before the season started. An absolute triumph if we consider where we were after three games, but slightly disappointing if you think about where we were 6 weeks ago. Amy, a couple of times when I asked you about particular aspects of the work we did this season, you said, judge us in May. Well, here we are. Let's not get into specifics, but what's your overriding feeling about what you've watched over the last 9 months?
Well... I think it's actually, you're right in that it's quite hard to wrap up easily because there were so many contrasting and conflicting periods of the season. And even the ending is conflicting and complex as well. So it's a bit of a struggle to say, okay, the season was blah, and that it all feels nice and clean and that people would broadly agree with you. I mean, I made the grave error this morning on Twitter, just relating to what James was saying, is picking out the kind of the atmosphere amongst the fans and this new synergy and energy that you can feel between the club and the punters.
And you talked about it in a piece as well, didn't you?
But I made the error of saying something like, you know, the age of the divided fan base is gone, like this new sort of unity. I tell you what, I had no sleep all weekend. I was a wretch. Sent out this tweet and I don't think I'll be going anywhere near Twitter for, you know, maybe till next season, I think, judging by the response. But, you know, there has been, I think, generally speaking, going to matches, a sense that people are hooked on what's going on. That's not to say that it's not been disappointing in the end. And that's not to say that if you have a top four and a chance of finishing above that lot in your hands and then you fumble it, that it's acceptable or enjoyable, because no one is going to think that in their right minds. But I think one of the things that was noticeable about the atmosphere against Everton was how much everybody was behind the team. And after two absolute, you know, horrific body blows at Tottenham and Newcastle, some people questioned what it might feel like. But I think it was quite important that there was a positive feeling for the end of the season that reflects, okay, the prize wasn't the prize everyone wanted, but if you can't sense that Arsenal are improving, I don't know what your expectations are. I find that difficult. And this is not a conversation about the manager. And I know that, you know, there isn't complete agreement about that, but it's a more general global feeling about the fact that I think the club feels like a happier, more united place than it has done for quite some time. And that pleases me. And so I think you can say, oh, it's such a weird one because, you know, people want a yes, no, black and white answer. Has it been a good season? Has it been a successful season? You know, is it not good enough? Is it good enough? Well, it is what it is. But I think fifth place in the Europa League is a return that this group of players at this current time has to regard as a step in the right direction.
I agree. And Adrian, do you think part of that, the atmosphere at the Emirates yesterday, because it was positive, do you think it's that basically that younger fans bounce back quicker, basically? They don't have all that baggage that they think about, oh, it's all going wrong. They just go, no, let's travel, hopefully, which is what younger people do.
It's a good point, yeah. I mean, it does seem like there's sort of next gen of fans are getting themselves tickets for the games. You know, is it the Ashburton Army in the Clock End? I think they make a really, really good noise. I've loved the part that they've played in the atmosphere inside the ground. And yeah, maybe. I talked about it in the show yesterday. I just said, look, what's gone is gone. Let's just enjoy the last day and make it the best it can be. And that's what the team did. My overriding emotions of the season conflicted the same as Amy. Two words, really. Regret, because we blew it with two terrible displays. We had two shots at glory and we blew it, but also optimism. And I think that's probably the overriding emotion at the end of the season, is that I am optimistic that the team is going in the right direction and we're on that upward curve and that we'll stay there.
And the regret will fade, one would hope, in the next few weeks. Amy, you want to talk about the Ashburton Army a little bit?
Yeah, just picking up on that point, Adrian, the Ashburton Army really interests me. I noticed them, it was impossible to ignore them, really, at the game. There are a group of young fans that position themselves in the back of the Clock End lower tier, and they're quite a raucous bunch that are going to sing non-stop. They started up with that Ale, Ale, Ale song in the second half, and it went on for about 20, 25 minutes. And it's great when you get a song that just keeps going and keeps going and keeps building. And they're all twirling their T-shirts around their heads, bare-chested, jumping up on the seats. And when safe standing comes in, it's going to be areas like that that have the benefit. And it reminded me of the Clock End at Highbury, because I think the most critical element of all, because Arsenal have been at the Emirates for 15 years or so now, and they've tried with that corner section in the North Bank, or I think Red Action are, to try and get a bit of an area going. But because you're right behind the goal and because you're next to the away fans, and that's the key, it attracts a certain element who just want it to be that little bit edgier. And it's working. I mean, they are at the heart of, there's a new vibe over there, thanks to them. And it reminds me a little bit of old school Clock End.
And following on from that point then, because I was going to talk about some of the positives for the season, and we were talking about the connection between the fans and the players. I saw Aaron Ramsdale at the end. I mean, he got a massive round of applause all the way around the ground. But that bit in the Clock End was where there was a real connection. And I feel like he's been talking to them the whole season, Adrian.
Yeah, he loves it, doesn't he?
And goalkeepers, he does, and they love him.
Yeah, exactly. I think goalkeepers, it's normal for them to have sort of bigger personalities and that they have that interaction with the supporters. And Ramsdale really sort of rides on that on that, I think. So, yeah, no, he's been a great positive. That connection, home and away, has been awesome. So yeah, that is the biggest positive. I think the kids look musters. You know, that's another big positive. What else? I mean, the signings are good, as I've touched on. From a tactical point of view, I'd say the biggest positive is chance creation. Last season, now it's easy to forget things like this, but last season we 10 teams created more chances than Arsenal. We were not good to watch. We were not imaginative. We were not creative. We were a little bit football by numbers. This season, we've let the handbrake off a little bit, and we've played with more of those qualities. And we're ranked fourth for shots this season, which equates to chances created. So, yeah, that's the big step forward for me in terms of we are more creative. The finishing bit is one of the big negatives. Well, we won't go there.
But we will talk about some of the downsides. Any other positives you wanted to add, Amy, before we move on from that, really? I mean, Elneny stepping in, maybe, or Granit Xhaka. There was a lovely round of applause for him when he came off, and I almost felt like...
I thought there was a lovely round of applause for him when he decided to get involved with Dele Alli. That was really... when
there was that as well, but also he did get involved with him, but not to the point where you thought he might get sent off here, which I liked. Let's talk about the manager. Would you say it's a good season for the manager, Amy, or again, is that too simplistic? He looked absolutely gutted. Even yesterday, he was still talking about the pain of the Newcastle game, but... he's obviously got a new contract. He's trusted by the hierarchy. The fans are singing songs about him. That never happened with Unai Emery. He's more in the job at the moment. I mean, obviously, these things can change very, very quickly. But right now, he is definitely our manager, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been strides made in that relationship between him and the fan base because, you know, for that first couple of years, he didn't really have a song. There wasn't that same... You sense that... they didn't really know each other that well, if that makes sense. And their trust wasn't quite there. And I think
we
that's
won the cup
improved.
Without the fans. You know, the big thing the big achievement was done in an empty stadium, wasn't it? Mm. Where you couldn't sort of be there to admire it. I think that definitely impacted it at the start.
That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that this season, there have been moments where... it might not have felt like it from inside the club where the hierarchy have obviously shown him tremendous backing all the way through, particularly in the difficult moments. But obviously the first three games, the trio of disastrous performances in the last, it was around about 10 games to go, whatever it was, Palace, Southampton and Brighton. The Aubameyang decision, which looms very large on how anyone wishes to judge this season, particularly as we've discussed that goals for has been a problem. And, you know, falling short close to the last. You know, these are difficult, difficult moments. And I think I'm interested, and we'll find out a little bit more next season, how much he and the club learn from that. Yeah, you know, a lot of people say it's a young team, it's a young manager, it's young executives, etc. Why is he learning on the job? You know, why are the executives maybe learning on the job? They've got to learn. Or, you know, they're in the job, and if they're not learning, that's the problem. So I think you should have, hopefully, a little bit of leeway, but up to a point. So, The kind of streakiness, as it's been called, of Arsenal seasons, that's got to be better next season. It's got to be. And whatever they do in the market or whatever decisions they make, and however the squad is moulded and everybody expects there to be some change this summer, that's got to be done with a view to a bit more equilibrium and that level being a bit further up all round.
Well, I mean, it has risen, hasn't it? I mean, we're essentially streaky at a slightly higher level than we used to be for the last couple of years, which is something. But this is what I want to come on to, Adrian. This whole thing about Mikel Arteta came in, and one of the things he was charged with was essentially changing the culture of the club, changing it. So we're not accepting, even though we want to get fourth place, we're not accepting a fourth place. We want to go higher than that. And it felt like That's what he's been trying to do. And I think to a certain extent he has done it. But yet again, we fell at the final hurdle, which is something we've been doing quite a bit in the last few years. So it's a qualified, it's a qualified, yes, you've done well, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I'm conflicted myself. Too many defeats, really, to say
13.
he's had a very good seat. You can't say that really when you've lost that many games, 13 games, you know, just a few more draws and would have got over the line there. So, and in games, we were unable to turn around our fortunes, were we? So I think we saw it, didn't we, with Manchester City on the final day. Pep Guardiola made some big calls in the second half and it turned it around. From a tactical point of view, and City win the league. Jurgen Klopp has time and again this season made tactical changes from the bench that have influenced matches in a positive way. Both managers have got more on the bench. Clearly, they've got better talent available
way more.
So that you have to qualify that. But I think from his point of view, if you're looking for an area of improvement, it has to be that. The football's better to watch now. The kid, he's helped to develop the kids. They've improved. So yeah, there've been pluses and minuses, I think, and yeah, he's doing okay. I think it'd probably be a stretch to say too much beyond that. He's doing okay.
He is. Amy, you talked about it last week. We all feel, don't we, that not signing someone in January was really a major turning point this season.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, in that magical kind of if only land. if Thomas Partey and the two fullbacks had stayed fit, the two first choice fullbacks, I should stress, for the second half of the season, and if a solution had presented itself, which meant that a striker got to at least double figures, if not more, which
all
is
it
what
would
you
have
would
taken.
Want from a you know, because the return from the four youngsters who operate around the striker has been really very, very good. You know, most teams won't have been getting that much goal contribution from their, you know, their sort of supportive attack players, I don't think. And considering their age, that's remarkable. And they need to build on that and take that one step further. But come on, you need at least to be looking at a roughly 20 goal a season man or contribution from whoever, you know, the men are that mostly play up front.
Eddie Nketiah was our top forward goal scorer with 5 goals.
Yeah, but he didn't have that many starts, did he? So, you know,
I'm not having a go at him. I'm not having a go at him. I'm just saying that was from about 10 starts. It's not good enough. So we know that we, you know, just signing a striker and maybe a backup midfielder would have been all it would have taken to get us into the Champions League. Go on, Adrian, you want to add something?
No, I was just going
to
say, without a striker, really, because I'm not saying that in a harsh manner, but without a regular goal scorer, we finished 1 point behind Spurs. So 1 point off the top four. So that is probably a reason to give you heart and encouragement in a way, even though obviously we all feel a little bit, well, very frustrated that we didn't address that situation.
And Amy, also, you did say, I remember you saying in January, one was Judges in May, two was, we've taken a massive chance here not signing anyone. But you also mentioned the injuries. And I have to say, I think we were unlucky with injuries. I look at the top four players that we lost to injury, three of them long term really was Thomas Partey, Kieran Tierney, and Tomiyasu, and also Ben White as well. That's essentially our defence aside from Gabriel. And I'm talking about Partey being covered for the defence as well. So we were unlucky with injuries in key positions, weren't we?
Yeah, I think if we could have all chosen some slightly different players to be injured, we would have maybe.
I know who you would have chosen.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but I see that. It's just the way it goes. But we did lose them in all the similar positions, all the defensive part of the game.
Which is why having good, stronger backups is so important. You look at Liverpool, Tsimikas coming for Robertson, not a big difference. Gomez coming in for Alexander-Arnold, not that big a difference. You know, two of the best fullbacks in world football, really, yet the cover was such that it wasn't disastrous. I think from our end, the cover was not strong enough. And yeah, that is something hopefully that will be addressed moving forward.
Amy? But one of the things they do have to think about as well in that regard is, you know, the whole notion of cover, because the three main players that were missing have something about them that makes you wonder if they are injury prone and if you're ever going to get a complete season. It's one thing asking your cover players to come in and, you know, odd games here and there, or maybe a one or three or whatever it is, but we're talking half a season.
Can I just add,
that's the bigger issue for me that needs real consideration in terms of who they choose for cover.
Yeah, but that's not just about those players, by the way. Thomas Partey basically never missed a game for Atletico Madrid in about seven seasons that he played for him. So I think the club, you know, if we're talking about a learning process here for how to be better, the club also have to look at what they're doing as well. We get, and we seem to, for the last 15 years, get more muscle injuries than a lot of other clubs. Adrian, do you think that is the case, or is it just seem that way? I mean,
the truth is, I don't know. No. I'm not a medical expert. I really don't know. What I do know, and what is factual, is that Arsenal didn't play as many games as a number of the other big clubs this
45
season.
Games. Yeah, 45 so, in total.
Yeah. So that shouldn't, you know, fatigue really shouldn't have come into it. I think mental fatigue definitely played its part towards the end on the young players. That's normal. That's to be expected, I think, because they're just not accustomed to going again three days to come back, you know, mentally sharp and ready.
It wasn't even 3 days, though, was it? It was 7 days. It was almost a week.
Yeah, but I suppose it's the... it's not so much the time, then. It's more pressure. So it's dealing with one high-pressure game, and then the next game's high-pressure. It's just all new to them, and that was a little bit too much in the end, wasn't it? So, I don't know about the medical side of it, genuinely. All I know is that they employ a lot of people, a lot of very clever people to get these things right, and it doesn't always go to plan. You know, players pull muscles. It's always happened.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we'll talk more about the first team in a bit. We're going to give out a few quickfire awards. But as I said, I caught up with Art earlier to reflect on the academy and the women's team seasons.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We were a bit with the handbrake at time.
This is Handbrake Off. Let's have a chat now with Art de Roche, who's here to talk about the academy and the women's teams. Good morning, Art.
Morning, Ian. Thanks for having me again.
That's all right. Do you know what? The reports back have been mainly positive, so we thought we'll give you another go.
mainly.
Listen, we don't have to get into that now, okay? We'll talk about that at your appraisal. you're doing fine. Right, let's talk the academy first, because this is the talent that we're going to see in the men's team in the coming years, or hopefully. They finished third in the league. I mean, was it seen as a good season? Does it actually matter where they finish? Is it more about player development?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think it does matter to a certain extent, considering last season they finished 10th and they just about stayed in the division. So they obviously would have wanted a big kind of increase in quality from that season. And they did get that. I think in terms of where they finish, it probably doesn't matter too much, if we're being honest. I think they won the league a few seasons back. That was Eddie Nketiah's age group. So Joe Willock was in there as well.
How old are these kids?
So most of them are 18, around 18, 19. So it is under 23s, but most of them will be quite young. I think Arsenal's team had maybe, it was among the youngest in the division. But yeah, I think it is more about developing those players and just kind of showing them, I guess, things to expect for when they make the jump into first team football, which I'm sure we're going to get into.
Well, we've seen a few of them on the bench. There haven't actually been that many who've actually stepped up and made it onto the pitch. But and I mean, it can't be. I mean, in the end, it's not. Can you buy players in, or is it just the academy players you've got who you're bringing through?
No, so you can, I guess, buy players in if you want to put it that way. So if you look at the under-23s team from this season, you've got players like Omar Rekic, who's a centre-back, who is not a Haaland product, was bought from Hertha Berlin, I think, maybe 18 months ago, right, something like that. So you can, and there are other examples of players who are bought by Arsenal quite late, as in close to their 20s, say around 17, 18 years old, and then play in the 23s before kind of making their steps into first team football. But then you will have players, say like Charlie Patino and Omari Hutchinson, who have been at Arsenal since they were kids. So there is that blend of players. Obviously, they all kind of, most will count towards the homegrown kind of status if they're signed early enough.
But
you do kind of get that mix in there.
All right, let's talk about some of the players that we hope to see. I mean, Charlie Patino was obviously, I think, the standout, wasn't he? Especially when he scored against, what was it, Sunderland in the League Cup. What a great moment. I was at that game and you really felt that sort of youthful thing going on with the crowd, obviously being a League Cup game, a lot more kids there than normally there would be. But then he comes on, everyone's singing his name, and he scores a really beautiful just side foot finish. And is he the one that people should look out for? Who are the others?
Yeah, I think he's the one with the most, I guess, anticipation around him, just because I think even if you think back to the League Cups before the Sunderland game, there was a lot of, I guess, expectation among supporters that he would at least be in the squad. Of course, he wasn't. But I'd say, yeah, he's probably the one where you see, I guess, the talent and also just getting used to being around the first team squad. He's been in training for a long while throughout the season. And then he just was a little bit, had a few months on the sidelines, not performance-based. And then outside of that, you've got players in quite a few positions, really. So if we're looking at the defence, then Omar Rekic was quite key for the 23s in terms of being able to play out from the back in the first half of the season, especially. Then if you want to go a bit further up the pitch into midfield, you've also got Miguel Aziz, who obviously was on loan at Portsmouth for the first half of the year.
And I read a piece with him, or a little piece with him, talking about how he wants first team football next season.
How
likely is that? Well, actually, that's not really a question to ask him, really. But I mean, he's obviously a prospect, and I guess he'll get a chance. That we do have Europa League in the men's team next year, so there are possibilities.
Yeah, and he did actually make his debut for Arsenal in the Europa League. So now he's probably 2 years older than he was then. So you'd hope that if he does stay at Arsenal, then opportunities do come there. But he did say he wants to play the whole season in men's football. So if that's the case, then I guess it probably depends on how much incoming business Arsenal do in the summer in terms of midfielders, because I think we've all seen this season that they need quality and depth in that area in particular.
And possibly experience as well, which he wouldn't, of course, offer. You did an interview with Kevin Betsy. I remember you were on the program, on the show earlier this season, talking about it. And he talked about that. I remember we chatted about the development of players, and it's about trying to do the right things. It's not necessarily about results.
Yeah, so I think it's quite interesting with those midfield players in particular. So for those who, I guess, haven't followed the 23s, they don't play the exact same system or formation as the first team. Sometimes they'll play in a back three, sometimes they'll play in a back four. And the main reason for that is to give them exposure to both. But within that, the principles stay the same. So they will still look to play out from the back and build through the pitch with the ball on the floor. So with that, you see, I think with the midfielders in particular, like Charlie Patino, Miguel Aziz, Salah, Alou Demhand, they will play different roles throughout a game. So at one moment, they may be the person receiving the ball off a goalkeeper. The next, maybe 5 minutes later, they may be the player who's breaking into the final third or making that pass into the final third. So it's all about having that variety, I think, and making sure those players are adaptable and malleable to be able to, I guess, adhere to whatever tactical demands are put on them when they make the step up to the first team, even if that's in a training capacity at London Colney rather than on a match day.
Well, we'll see who we see next season from the under-23s. As for the women's team this season, you watched quite a lot of the games, did you not?
Yeah, I haven't got the actual tally down of how many games I went to, but it was a fair amount, I'd say.
Yeah, and how would you describe the season? Because, you know, we talked the other week about the fact this is the third season in a row without a trophy, and yet they finished runners-up by a point to a very, very good Chelsea team with someone who is, I generally agree, to be the best coach in the women's game. And, you know, got to the quarterfinals of the Champions League. I mean, this was a good season for them.
Yeah, it's weird. It almost parallels the men's season, but to another step forward, if that makes sense. So obviously they were in a title race until the final day of the season, and they were in the Champions League until the quarterfinals. The main thing was making another step forward from last season. So their last season with Joe Montemurro in charge. And I think they did that with Jonas Edvard, because I think it was very clear to everyone that he had areas that he wanted to improve. So one of those was playing out from the back under pressure. Another was how they fared against the top teams in the league, so Chelsea and Manchester City. And they improved in both aspects of that. So I think last season they didn't take any points off those teams. This year they took 4 points off both. So you definitely see the kind of improvements there. I think the main thing is, obviously, they just had, even if they drew one more game, so that Birmingham game in January, probably they would have won the league. So very tight there. And then when you're looking on more of a European stage, I think the main thing would be how they defend as a unit and the areas they look to defend in, which I think there's been gradual progress, but you're still kind of looking for that that next step forward to come next season. And I think there are a few plans in place.
I watched quite a lot of the Champions League games. I mean, Barcelona are certainly were certainly a step up for them. By the way, that Leon goal was an unbelievable shot. If you haven't seen it, it was an absolutely fantastic shot from about 30 yards into the top corner. Viv Miedema signed. She played, I was looking at the stats, she played the most games. No one played 22, but she played 21 and came on as a sub in the other one, I believe. That is a relief for the team. I mean, she is a focal point and she is one of the stars of women's football. And to lose someone like that would have hurt the status of the club, wouldn't it, really?
Yeah, it's major. I think if they lost her this summer, it maybe not totally would have undone everything of this season, but it would have made building on that much harder. I think even though say people wouldn't view last season as her best, she was still fairly influential, especially in the second half of the year, where they were able to get back on track and take that title race to the final day. So I think as well, the fact that they've been able to do it so early, it's not even June yet, and they've been able to confirm that, is a major kind of statement, because then they have the rest of the summer to kind of figure out or sort out what they want to do in terms of recruitment. I think
still top scorer last season as well, wasn't she?
And she had the most assists in the WSL as well. So you kind of get to see, I guess, more of a natural game when she's playing in that number 10 role, I think. Because even though she's an amazing striker, record goal scorer for the Netherlands, I think she's always had that side to her game where she naturally drops off into that pocket. So I think having her and then Blackstenius in front is a very good formula. And I think the main thing you'd hope is Arsenal can just build on that in the first half of the year, similar to what they did last year when Leah Williamson signed in the summer. And then that first half of the year was almost like a proof to her that she made the right decision to then go on and recommit. So yeah, I think definitely a major positive going into the summer, and hopefully they can take that momentum on into the start of the season.
And other positives, Beth Mead had a pretty good season as well. Quite a few goals, played well. Anyone else that you wanted to highlight?
Yeah, I think Beth Mead's probably the main one. She's my pick for player of the season, both in terms of the league and at Arsenal. I think in terms of what she offered, she was the most complete player in the league, being able to score goals, create chances, get assists, but also her defensive work in that final third pressing was unrivaled, I think. In terms of Arsenal, I also thought, I guess where they probably lost the league was the absences to Leah Williamson, obviously, in that kind of winter period.
Yeah.
You just see how influential she is from centre-back, being able to create things from there. And I think it'll be interesting to see how she does in the Euros playing in midfield, because obviously that's where Serena Weigman usually plays her. And as England captain, it'll just be quite interesting to see how that works. She has played in midfield for Arsenal before under Joe Montemurro, so it is an option. But I just wonder how that dynamic will be. And obviously, I think we've spoken about her before on the podcast, but Manuela Zinsberger deserves quite a big shout for 13 clean sheets across the year. I think she's developed every year she's been at Arsenal, so it's quite good that Arsenal have players in almost every zone of the pitch that have been fairly influential.
Yeah. And one more question. I mean, I read a tweet that Ian Wright did. Big supporter of the women's game, loves Viv Miedema, and loves the women's team. And he said that the women's game, in order to progress, it needs to not have a discussion every time about how the women's game is progressing. and I sort of understand what he's talking about, but is the big step forward now, when we saw what happened with Barcelona in the Champions League, when they played, was it in the Champions League, when they played Real Madrid and the Nou Camp was full, 98,000 people. In the end, in this country, that's what we need here, right? We need people to go to the games.
Yeah, I think the main thing, I guess, that Ian Wright is getting to is it just needs to be viewed as normal rather than it being viewed as women's football, just viewed as football. Because at the end of the day, that's what it is. I don't feel like there's any major deal in saying, oh, Arsenal did this. Obviously, people will know if you're talking about the men's or the women's team, depending on what players you're talking about. So yeah, I think the main kind of viewpoint is, okay, it's just football, get on with it, rather than having to celebrate every little minor detail that happens every few months. And I think when you get to that point as well, also, I think it's been mentioned before, but people like also not criticizing things that are justifiable to be criticized as well. I think when you get to a place when people do that regularly, So say, for instance, in Arsenal terms, they should have beaten Birmingham. And if they did, they would have won the league. So I think that's where you can, when you can get to a more honest place, I think is where you'd get that balance that you want. So I think people are getting there, but again, you just don't need to be so, or people, I say you in general.
I understand that. I wasn't taking this
in general terms, but yeah, not everything is like the best thing ever. And not everything's the worst thing ever. So yeah, I think that's the
main thing. That to football fans. I love that you're saying that to football fans. Thanks, Art. It's been lovely speaking to you this season. And we will, we are doing a few shows in the off season. So hopefully we'll see you for one of them.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
We were a bit with the handbrake at time.
Okay, this is Handbrake Off, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Our little season review. Amy Lawrence and Adrian Clark are here. We're going to give out a few awards for the season. Let's have Player of the Season first. Amy? yeah, it's not easy.
It's not, you know. I've changed my mind about 12 times during different points of the season. I had Gabriel for ages. I think he's been really important, but I think it's hard to look past Saka.
It is. It is. Even in the quieter moments, he affects games. And just purely for that moment against Manchester United when he barged Telles off the ball and then went round Matic in the first minute and set the tone for the entire game, I'm going for Saka as well. What are you having, Adrian?
Yeah, I think honourable mentions for Ramsdale, for Gabriel, yes, for Odegaard, but player of the season is Saka. Yeah, most shots, most goals, most assists. He's still a kid. Yeah, he's been sensational.
What a talent. Yeah. What a talent. And also got nominated for Young Player and Player of the Season. Goal of the Season. Amy, you were struggling a bit here, and I understand.
Well, it's only just because I'm tired.
We're emotionally drained.
I'm a bit like... anything from the Tottenham home game, which was a real highlight, I would say.
It was wonderful.
Beautiful things.
It was. Adrian, you mentioned that as well, and that the way that Smith Rowe got away. I love that first touch of Smith Rowe to take him away, and then the pull back and Ober with the unerring finish. It was lovely, that moment.
I think a lot of our best moments this season have been on those sort of counter-attacks, which kind of dried up a little bit, I have to say, towards the end of the season. We were dynamite, weren't we, on those fast breaks, turning defence into attack. That was the classic moment. I think it started with Ramsdale. We played out from the back, a little bit jammily.
It was a bit high risk.
And then we got it up to Ober, it went back, and yeah, it was a lovely, lovely team move. And my favourite goal, though, was Lacazette's against Southampton. If you remember it again, it starts with the keeper. We beat their press, and we just zigzag our way up the pitch in just glorious fashion, and it ends with Lacazette scoring a rare goal in front of the clock end in open play. And yeah, that was football how it should be played. And yeah, it was glorious.
Interesting that we talk about goal of the season and they're from the two strikers, the two main strikers. Says a lot, doesn't it, when they got four goals each this season.
They didn't get many, but they were good ones. All right. Well, I'm not doing that. I'm going for, I'm having Granit Xhaka against Manchester United. I of course, a long shot hit in the back of the net, and there's a sort of wow factor to it. But I love the atmosphere that day. I had a great day. I think all Arsenal fans did to beat them. And it was a tight game, and it could have gone either way, really, that game. 3-1 sounds, it was closer than that, but I thought it was a lovely moment for him. And I've steadily grown, I'm not saying to love him. I think that'd be quite hard. He's a hard guy to love. But I liked his influence on the team, and I thought that was due reward for what he's done the last few months of the season. Save of the season, we all know, right? Mm. We all know it was not just Arsenal save of the season, by the way. That is the Premier League save of the season, I would say. I don't think there's anything better. But I think just generally for his contribution, we talked about it earlier in the pod, for his contribution to the connection between the fans and the team, and the way that he just made the defence feel a bit calmer.
Yeah, I was listening to a show on TalkSport on the way back from the game, and I mean, I disagreed with a lot of what they were saying about Arsenal. And then they did a little awards section about, and one of them was signing of the season, and I think it was Darren Ambrose, said Aaron Ramsdale, which, you know, out of everybody across every team.
It's impressive.
He picked that out, and yeah, I think it's a good shout. Whether that's the correct answer or not, I'm not sure, but It was a very good signing, looking back on that. And yeah, it's I'm excited for what the future holds for Aaron Ramsdale.
It's that personality, Amy, isn't it, really? It's just we've all connected with him.
It's not just how he's played pure football-wise. He's become influential incredibly quickly. You know, he affects players around him.
He does. Shout out for the 60-yard pass he played to Martinelli in one of the home games. Right onto his foot, and Martinelli's on the attack. And I just absolutely love watching him play. Go on, Adrian.
And the chip shot video. Yeah, he also played a big part in one of the best viral videos of the entire season. So well played, Aaron. Yeah, great.
A couple of slightly more annoying ones. I had a stupid moment of the season, which was not one of our players being stupid, but it was Gabriel Martinelli being booked twice in half a second against, was it Wolves away? Was it? I think they're just, was, I thought, yeah. And I know that all teams think they don't get the rubber degree when it comes to decisions, but I'd also, there's an honourable mention there for Granit Xhaka getting booked and the referee pointing to four different places, and it's the first tackle he's made in the entire game. So something weird is going on, but that, for me, do we have any moments when we just went, oh, for Christ's sake, what are you doing, and slapped our head? Either of you? It doesn't matter. I just wanted to bring it up, particularly.
That Martinelli at Wolves was the stupidest moment of the season, not by him, but just in general, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And not that I want to finish on anything negative particularly, but I'm going to. The most disappointing moment of the season as well. I mean, Tottenham away was a disappointment, but it wasn't totally unexpected. But losing away at Everton and Southampton, I mean...
I think you can put them together in a collection and say it's the biggest disappointment this season was those five away games. That we lost to bottom half teams that ended up in the bottom half: Southampton, Brentford, Palace, Newcastle, and Everton, and we failed to score in four of those five games as well. They were pretty miserable performances, and you just think one win there and everything's different. So that is for me, that is the biggest disappointment. That little group, that cluster of games, does my head in.
Amy's just nodding. Yeah, I think you got it.
If only you could see Amy's face right now. She looks very forlorn.
Yeah. Well, when you said this, what I was going to say, there's 13 to choose from, but actually it's just five in particular. But yeah, we started with three words. I'd probably go for three words to end and say White Hart Lane, because let's face it, it's always the most awful place to not show up.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. By the way, if you want to, all of those disappointing moments, as well as the good moments you talk about, can be seen on Amazon Prime.
Oh, yes. When's it out?
All or Nothing. I actually don't know, but it's pretty soon, I believe, if you want to relive it. I'm probably going to take a moment before I start watching that. But anyway, it'll all be on Amazon Prime. Let's then, before we go, have a song to end, a song for the season. Amy, do you have a song for us for the season?
You know when something just pops into your head and you thought, "Cool, I've not thought of that song or heard it in decades."
Yeah.
I was just watching out the last 5 minutes of the game against Everton in the Emirates, sort of, you know, twiddling my thumbs a bit. And, well, not really, but Captain Sensible, Glad It's All Over. Just popped into my head from somewhere. And I thought, yeah, it's that feeling of like, right, we've done this one, okay, we've had enough now. It's, you know, it is what it is. Let's move on and get better.
Okay. All right, Adrian, what have you got?
Do you know what? Similar vibe for me, really, because I think we're all feeling a little bit regret, a little bit annoyed that we didn't quite get over the line in the way that we wanted to. And obviously that lot up the road of crowing at the moment. So I think we've got to shake it off. That's a bit of Taylor Swift. Shake it off this summer. Just shake it off and we'll come back stronger in August and hopefully learn from the errors of our ways.
And back in Europe, by the way. Yeah. Back in Europe after finishing eighth twice in a row. I'm having No Regrets by the Walker Brothers, because I have no regrets. I've enjoyed this season. I would go as far as to say that I've enjoyed this season as much as any season at the Emirates. I mean, I genuinely mean that, right? And I have no regrets about it. I mean, obviously, it would have been nice if we'd beaten Tottenham and Newcastle, but we didn't. But we finished fifth and forward and onward. Sorry, I'm looking at your faces when I'm doing this. It's actually, you're going,
well,
really?
It's great you enjoyed this season so much because you can watch it again and again and again. Coming up soon. You can relive it all as many times as you want.
You're a better person than me. I've got loads of regrets.
Really? Okay, I can fast forward through it a bit. But you know what it is? I think the point is, it is what it is, and onward for next season. Well, thanks to... we're done, by the way. We're done for a couple of weeks. We are going to come back and do some summer stuff. Obviously, there'll be, 15 new signings to talk about in the next few weeks, and that's all very, very exciting. In the meantime, thanks to Amy Lawrence. Thanks to Adrian Clark. Also, thanks to James McNicholas and Art DeRoche, who came, and Flo Lloyd-Hughes, I believe, came on one or two shows. So thanks to all of you guys. Thanks to Abby, our producer. And thank you, Gooners, for listening to us witter on for the season. We'll be back after a couple of weeks when we'll just take a well-earned break, I think. And see you soon. Ta-ra.
We'll be back and Stoney will be more optimistic than ever. See ya.
Thomas Frank was kissing children at the end and they're all singing Hey Jude. And I'm thinking, this is the worst thing I have ever watched.
January's been one little hit in the solar plexus after another.
The one huge glaring issue is how this team reacts to setbacks.
My realistic expectation is fifth or sixth, so Europa League.
It was mayhem. It just felt very unlike normal games at the Emirates.
It's Aubameyang! Standards this season, they are running riot, they've doubled their goal tally.
And then obviously the leap was just, I mean, that he has to have a photograph of that save on his wall.
Well, it is Maddison, and it's a brilliant save again from Ramsdale and off the line by Partey.
I don't think it gets any better than that.
Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang was the centre of a dramatic deadline day saga which ended with him joining Barcelona on a free transfer from Arsenal.
But Arteta's never bought a forward.
It's been quite the show at Selhurst Park.
It's one of those things that you go, that is an hour and a half of my life I'm not getting back. And it, plus,
sure,
we're talking about
imagine me in the double duvet sheet trying to figure out where the corners are, bumping into staff.
Thinking, I mean, this is more fun than watching that last night.
Flowers of the earth. The majority of our game, as you mentioned before, was getting the ball out to Saka or Martinelli and hooking it across to the apparition of Olivier Giroud, which didn't seem like a particularly sensible tactic.
Lacazette, Pepe, Alexander Lacazette! 95 minutes, he's won it!
There's no doubt the crowd at the Emirates are happy as well. It's a very happy feeling at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, don't play Liverpool on Wednesday night there.
Football's a brutal, ruthless game, isn't it? It's been decided where we could
divide it. just think of us, kids, as some sort of bread poultice, all right? What we'll do for the next half an hour is we'll suck the poison out.
You give a little love and it all comes back to you.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.